Okay, Kevin, we have a quorum.
Excellent. Thank you, Brenda. Okay, welcome everyone. Thank you for coming. Let's jump right into it. So first off, we have the approval of the agenda.
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Type of aircraft, et cetera, et cetera.
The agenda is approved. Thank you. Item two, approval of academic senate meetings from May 13th, 2021.
So moved.
Second.
We determined that.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Too many angled attacks.
Okay, the minutes are approved. Moving on to item three, announcements, administrative reports, and memorials. We'll start with our guest speaker. I'm happy to have President Frank H. Wu here to talk to us for a little bit. So I'll mute and turn it over to him. And then if there are any other announcements, reports, or memorials, I'll ask for those. Thank you. Frank.
Great. Thank you so very much. I'm pleased. I'm thrilled to be here to offer you annual State of the College for members of the Academic Senate. We'll have a ceremony for faculty recognition where I'll deliver an updated State of the College that will be either in person or hybrid in the fall, but it's such an important annual tradition to come to the Senate and to talk a little bit about the State of the College, and I know we have many new senators. I want to acknowledge Kevin Ferguson, the Academic Senate Chair, Emma Richter, the Deputy Chair, Dave Fields, your Parliamentarian, and all the members of the Academic Center for joining us today. Thank you for your continuing service to this great institution of ours. A debt of gratitude as well to Simone Yearwood, the former Chair of the Academic Senate, for her outstanding leadership, and I wish her well, and I hope you'll join me, in her new role as the Interim Dean of the Benjamin Rosenthal Library here at Queen's College. We're grateful. I know I personally am grateful that we have some sense of normalcy once again. We are seeing faculty, staff, students returning in a safe, smart way. That's on a limited basis and with safety protocols all throughout. We've emphasized that we're following the science. We're looking at all the data. We have a whole process that we go through with meetings. Every Tuesday morning with every constituency presented to talk about how to do this in a way that brings us back as smoothly as possible. And I know it's been in fits and starts and there's been anxiety, and I want to acknowledge that. That's something that we'll have a few more weeks of, maybe a couple months of, but your ability to adapt and your resilience, I want to thank you for that. You know, our athletics teams will be returning in full for the 2021-22 season. That's great to see. Despite all the challenges, we're once again named a best college by the Princeton Review. That's for the 30th straight year. That's thanks to the hard work, the dedicated work of students, faculty, and staff. And as members of the college community take advantage of free vaccinations, we want to be able to move toward more and more in-person. Now, the return of these in-person activities depends on our vaccination levels and on following the rules, adhering to the safety protocols. We once again are hosting a pop-up vaccination site, so I know some people haven't gotten around to it, and we hope you will, and we're trying to make it easy for you. Just come to campus. There's a pop-up vaccine site right now. I just walked by it this morning. You know, as we talk about all this, I want to emphasize that we follow federal and state policies and CUNY guidelines, and those change from time to time. So people ask me, well, what will it be like next semester? What will it be like next month? And I try to be cautious, and I say, well, I don't always know, and I don't want to predict. Something that I don't want to do to you is something that I don't like when it's done to me, which is to tell you something today and then turn around and tell you something entirely different tomorrow. That just adds to everyone's anxieties and frustrations. So I would rather say to you, you know, the truth is, I'm not absolutely sure, all right? I would rather do that than make up something or guess and guess wrong. So far, knock on wood, we've been safe, and it shows. We have had a minimum of spread on campus, and that's thanks to the vigilance that you've all demonstrated. We do anticipate that winter intersession and spring semester will more closely resemble pre-pandemic life on campus. Here's what I mean by that. We're, of course, part of the CUNY system, some 25 campuses, 275,000 students, and we benefit from being part of this system. The CUNY system has a target. The target for the spring is 70% full in-person, and then 30% or fewer online or hybrid. So it's 70-30, but hybrids are grouped with online. So let me say that again. That's 70% full in-person, 30% online or hybrid. That would include fully online or partly, you know, hybrid, et cetera. And the 70% is the minimum. We'd like to get a little higher than that, and is something that there's been student demand for. We know, though, that students also want flexibility, and so the 30% of online is significantly above pre-pandemic levels, and the goal is to take what we've learned during the pandemic and pivot to online, hybrid, high-flex in a strategic way so that students who want their education mainly in person, but maybe for a big lecture class or for something, or because they have to care for their parents or grandparents, maybe they for a semester need to be online, that we're here, that we evolved to serve them. So I don't think that we will ever go back to 2019, and that's okay. We only move forward, and there's some things that we've learned during the pandemic that maybe we'll keep doing. Some of you have heard me talk about how my own family now does Zoom birthday parties. We're going to keep doing that because, you know, these are my in-laws. They're not going to come around for my 54th birthday. I'm not important enough for them to fly in for that. But if I host a Zoom, they'll Zoom with me for 60 minutes. And it's nice to be able to gather, not just for the holidays, but to do this. And there's an academic equivalent of that. For example, we're looking at high flex delivery. That's where some of the students are in person and others are remote. And we know that that adds to the work for faculty. And so our Center for Teaching is really helping to give people the tools that they need. You know, I'm humbled and gratified that with everything happening, Queens College came together in what was my first year and together, not just me, not just a few people, but dozens and indeed hundreds and more than 1,000 at the town halls came together to do a strategic plan for the next 5 years. This has been posted on the website. Will be posted on the website and will be released in print form. It's in the mail, as they say. This plan was unprecedented in scope. And I'm using that word in the proper manner. Never before have we pulled together this many people. There are about 6 dozen who participated on one of 5 working groups or on the overall steering committee. This included faculty, staff, alumni, most importantly, students. It included members of the Queens College Foundation, members of the community joining us even for some of the town halls to talk about our future. We had 11 virtual town halls, and with data, the working groups looked at, and some of you in the Senate were part of this, and I thank you. They looked at 5 subjects. Number 1, the curriculum. Number 2, diversity, equity, inclusion. Number 3, faculty, scholarship, and creativity. Number 4, fiscal sustainability. And number 5, student success and student life. So they put together, based on the 8 decades of our high-quality education to students, our new strategic plan. Oh, I'm informed by Rahel Fester, who will be helping to lead the implementation process that we'll be announcing, that it actually is already now up on the website. So that's great. One area that I want to emphasize here with you that's central to our mission and is a personal priority of mine is diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI. Before it became a catchphrase, it was always part of our identity, part of our DNA from our very founding, and it's integral to student success. We're here to prepare students to serve as innovative leaders in a diverse world that they will make more equitable and inclusive. So we want to strive to recognize the potential of all students and facilitate opportunities for them to achieve it. This is something that's measurable, and I intend for us to make tangible progress in this regard. We're here for students, all students. The Queen's College Business School will be an important part of this, as will the Arts School. What these will do is bring together the expertise of our faculty and staff and our partners, our Kupferberg Arts Center, to create new synergies to help our students. The business school will strengthen connections among the existing programs, giving students a comprehensive experience with all of the numbers of students that we have in accounting and economics. We already know that the demand is strong. The arts school, that's arts plural, QC Arts, will foster excellence, innovation, leadership, and inclusion with experiential programs. And we'll be looking at new academic tracks and new programs, such as in arts administration. I'd like, people ask me, you know, what really at the end of the day is my vision? And student success is at the heart of it. It's really at the center of everything we do. But I want to be more concrete and specific. My hope is that we'll be the college of the double major. I mean that literally and metaphorically, the person with more than one skill set. Someone who enters the business and liberal arts program, for example. The future belongs to people who are able to excel and adapt constantly, who know that if you just do one thing well, the future is likely to pass you by. You need to be T-shaped, to have both the breadth and the depth of expertise. So you can do more than one thing, even though there's one thing that you do especially well. I don't want our students to think, well, I need to choose between accounting and dance because my parents or grandparents, they want me to be practical and be an accounting major, but my heart is in dance. I'd like to see accountants who can dance and dancers who can do accounting, right? That there's nothing that makes those mutually exclusive. And as an institution, we can remove the structural barriers and help folks do both, be the accountant and dancer that they strive to be. I have discussed with your chair, and I will be asking more formally the Academic Senate to adopt some amendments in its governance charter and to look at the change that was discussed just before the pandemic, where divisions will become schools, including considering any governance consequences of that. I will note that I want to approach this with the utmost respect. It is not the intention, not my intention, that of anyone in a leadership role, to alter what is within the Senate's own province of how you allocate the seats and the votes, etc. That's up to you. So I just want to assure you that's not something that I'm intruding into. And I believe it may be possible to continue without a change unless you yourself wish to make change. We'll also be submitting proposals for the Arts and Business School to the Senate for consideration. At this point, we're just bundling existing programs, but we want to share, because we believe in shared governance, although there shouldn't be governance implications at this time. In the future, as these schools grow, we may come back, especially as we look at the possibility, and when I say later, this could be 2 years from now, it could be two decades from now, it will be down the road, but the business school in particular, at some point, once we identify a lead donor and so on, we would like to ensure that it's accredited. That's an 8 to 10 year process. So I just want to be clear, we will at this time, of course, share with you in the spirit of shared governance, but we're trying to design this not to trigger any big issue. There will not be new deans. These are schools in the same sense that the Aaron Copland School is a school, or SEAS is a school. That is, they're schools inside schools, and they're just putting together what we already have. So the implementation of the strategic plan, which includes student success at its heart with diversity, equity, inclusion, includes the business school and the art school, has already begun, and the implementation. Each member of the faculty and staff has a role in meeting goals. If you're not speaking, perhaps you could mute yourself. So to keep the progress on track, we'll be forming an Institutional Effectiveness Advisory Council, which will consult with the Cabinet, and departments will conduct regular assessments in collaboration with the Office of Institutional Effectiveness. You know, I'm committed to being here, and I want to see the strategic plan certainly through its completion. It's a five-year plan, and several strategic plans after, with your willingness, of course. Being president at Queens College, many of you have heard me say, is a dream job. And I mean that. Until I retire, and I don't intend to retire early, I would like to do this job. I say that because I want you to know I'm committed to you, committed to this community, to this institution, especially as we come out of the pandemic and we see the role that we have to play. Let me turn briefly to the budget, because everything depends on our having a budget and having a good budget. Earlier this year, Joe Loughran, our Vice President of Finance, so he's our CFO, Chief Financial Officer, put together a presentation called Budget 101. I'm going to ask that he repeat that, and we'll arrange for an updated session. We'll invite all the senators to that. We want to embrace transparency. And what we've done is we've shown you how this place runs, what our sources of funding are. Despite our name, it's primarily for the four-year colleges of the CUNY system, the state of New York, with some money coming from the city. And for the two-year schools, it's more city-oriented. And federal and philanthropic sources, as well as auxiliary revenue sources, such as the rentals on campus that you see from time to time for movie shoots. Public support, though, is crucial. If we work together, we can achieve the support we need. We have to advocate consistently, because public higher education is a wise investment, not only in individual students, but in the community. We are an engine of the economy, just as the school is, and higher education is, the engine of your personal advancement. So too, we are the engine of advancement for the borough and the city. And you know what? Even though I'm trained as a lawyer, and I'd like to think that I can write and give a speech and do it reasonably well from time to time, it is students who are our most effective messengers, with members of the city council, with senators, with members of the New York Assembly, because they're the constituents. And so the more we can work together, and I know we sometimes have slightly different messages, slightly different tactics, but overall, it's in support of Queens College. Let's show them, continue to show them, as we did with the study we put together about a year ago, that for every tax dollar, taxpayers receive almost $5 in return on the investment over the course of the working lives. Economists can actually calculate that when you look at what our graduates do and what they contribute to the economy. They create small businesses and employ people, whether or not those employees went to Queens College. You know, Business Insider ranked us fourth in the nation, not in the city or the state, fourth in the nation in their study of return on investment for individual students. My goal is for us to rank at least as high in what we contribute to the surrounding community. Now, we have received federal funding. HERF, that's the Higher Education Emergency Relief Fund, and that includes several separate pieces. It's an alphabet soup of important budgetary nourishment, CARES, CRISA, and ARP. These funds are restricted in purpose. It is millions of dollars, you've seen those headlines, but it's only for revenue losses and for expenses that are associated with the pandemic. It has to have a direct nexus. So some people have wondered, well, don't you have millions of dollars? Yes, we do, to address the pandemic and pandemic issues during a limited time frame. And that includes helping take care of expenses such as the additional health and safety measures, buying the PPE and so on, mental health, technology for remote learning, training staff. It's not just a bag of money that was thrown to us. It's a deliberate aid program that's designed to prevent higher education institutions from being just decimated by the extraordinary losses. So if you hear about this, if you have an opportunity to thank a federal legislator, a member of Congress, it's HERF, the Higher Education Emergency Relief Fund, H-E-E-R-F, and it's one time. Thanks to the funding, though, our chancellor, Felix Matos Rodriguez, who of course preceded me in this very office where I sit, a great leader with whom I'm privileged to work, and the CUNY Board of Trustees. They established the CUNY Combat Program. This program will help at least 50,000 students overcome debt from tuition and fees accumulated during the pandemic by providing relief so that those students will be able to move forward. Now, it is limited in time. It's for 4 specific semesters. And what will happen is most of the students who benefit, their balances will be cleared automatically and should have been cleared already. Others will be able to apply for hardship starting a little later. And financial holds should have been lifted immediately, financial holds, not other types of holds, so that students could register. We have added to that, thanks to the foundation, our own RISE scholarship funds. So I want to express my profound appreciation for this funding. We've never seen anything like it before, and I hope you'll join me whenever the opportunity presents itself, thanking the legislators and our foundation. Well, that's a good note to end on, a note of gratitude to everyone who's part of this Senate, and I look forward to a wonderful year of working together, Kevin, Emma, Dave, as well as with additional, I want to reiterate thanks to Simone for the past year. It's been a challenging 15 months. We're optimistic for the future once again, and that's really at the end of the day all that you need is to have hope. I look forward to seeing each and every one of you on campus soon and safely. Thanks so very much. Kevin?
Thank you so much, President Wu. I think that's a wonderful message. I wanted to say that we appreciate your leadership. Thanks for coming to talk to us and to lay out some of the things that we'll be working on in the next year. And we really look forward to accomplishing those kinds of things. I think we probably have a few minutes. If there are any questions that anyone had, you could raise your hand or post in the chat. And as we know, our president is very responsive, so I'm sure an email would not go unanswered. Yes, Saskia.
Yeah, so my question is, I know that it's a bit tough to like project for the spring, but will there be an in-person commencement this year?
So it's my hope that will be an in-person commencement, but one thing that I'm careful about is I don't want to make any promise that I'm not sure I can keep. And you know, 3 months ago, I was actually more hopeful, but then this Delta variant popped up, and boy, you probably have seen, and maybe you know, in these breakthrough cases, though the vaccine, I want to really emphasize, and I'm not a scientist, I just read a lot, like we all do, and I try to read what's reliable. If you're vaccinated, you're in pretty good shape, but no vaccine's perfect, and we probably all know someone who, even though they're vaccinated, got COVID, and most of them, it's a sniffle, maybe it's asymptomatic, but I've heard about a few cases, and I mean credible reports where someone, they're vaccinated and they got it bad, you know, and that's what happens. And so I'm very hopeful. I would like to have an in-person commencement. I would like to have in-person activities. I come into the office, this very office, every day. And the rules apply to me. I have to wear a face mask. If I'm not wearing one, unless you're outdoors by yourself or in your office by yourself, then it's fine. But if you're outdoors and, you know, you're a good 100 feet away from anyone, that's all right. And just sitting here, it's all right. But indoors at the meetings, you know, I mask up. So we got to keep doing that. And people ask me, well, when are we going to stop doing that? I don't know. So I'll be as clear as I can. I would love to have an in-person commencement. I'm not going to promise you an in-person commencement because we've got to be safe. We did have an in-person welcome day. We capped it at 500 people. So that's the other thing we're looking at. Sometimes it's not all or nothing. You can do something that's in person, but not everyone can bring as many guests. You can do something that's in person, but you've got to be socially distanced or in person with face masks. So there are some variations that we'll look at, but we are already holding in-person activities. By the way, those of you in the Senate, please, if you would do everything you can to tell your friends, your colleagues, whatever the role at Queens College, please learn the rules about accessing campus, because I'll tell you, we still have people, and I want to be clear, people, so it's not just students. I don't want to criticize just students, because it includes faculty, includes staff, who show up and they say, what? I didn't know you needed a vaccination. I didn't know that I could set up my ID card, and it appears that they haven't looked at anything. And some even tell us, well, I don't read email. Or they say, well, I'm told someone told public safety this morning when they were talking about the website, they said the website, that's a stupid place to put information. And please, there are a set of rules. We've tried to make them as clear as possible. And if we follow those rules, we'll be headed toward an in-person commencement. So I hope so. Kevin, it's up to you. I think we have a couple more hands. I'll try to be brief in my answers, but this
No, that's a great observation to make. We appreciate it. Yes, Emma, you had your hand up. Did you change your mind or do you want to go next?
Oh, I put it down while President Wu was answering.
Sorry, I couldn't quite hear what you were saying.
I initially put my hand down while you were answering to be quiet. But I do have a question. So I've been working very closely with a student, maybe a few more students who were very impacted by financial stress due to the pandemic. And they had basically holds placed on their accounts because they fell in so much debt that they couldn't register for classes. I'm assuming by now the holds have been taken off their accounts.
So I can't speak to any issue about a specific student without the details. By the way, don't tell me any of the details and don't put that in the chat, because they're all these privacy rules and I'm very respectful. And by the way, just in general, in a setting like this, never tell me about a specific employee or student, even if you think it's okay with them, because then the world finds out, you know, their information, and we want to avoid that. So send folks to Richard Alvarez, who's the vice president, who oversees all of this. And if someone had a financial hold, it should have been removed already if it was a financial hold. Now, sometimes people have something that's not a financial hold. I understand there are a few other types of administrative holds that aren't money related. But for anything that is a hold, the bursar's office, and by the way, our offices are all open. They're by appointment, so you can't just stop in, and that's for safety reasons. We want to protect everyone. But they are open, and they're running, and you can set up an appointment. So please have those students contact the bursar's office to address that. And in addition, Jen Jarvis, who's the assistant vice president for student affairs, her whole team is working around the clock to help students. And I know both Vice President Richard Alvarez and AVP Jen Jarvis really are on the side of students. So please direct your friends to those offices, but financial holds should already have been removed.
Thank you, President Wu. So we'll recognize John, and then Joe, and then Thomas, and then we'll move on with further announcements and memorials. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. My question concerns the projected mix of 70-30 campus or campus to online courses. Looking ahead to the planning of that, are you aware that there's a distinct logistical problem for students combining an online class with a campus class, because our students are taking their online classes at home, an hour away from campus. And when you finish your online class at 10:30, you can't get to your 10:45 campus class. And, in our department of political science, we're finding that students, they want to take hybrid classes, but, they can't, it's just very hard to do it. And, a lot of the debate about online classes has been about the individual difficulties of classes, but there also is a separate question of how a student can combine an online and in on-campus schedule, given the fact that the campus has very limited space for privacy for online classes?
Yes. So, John, great question. We have something that, you know, your question makes me realize we need to publicize it more. We're calling them Zoom zones. Boy, are they popular. I don't know if Simone is on this. Is she still in the Senate? Is Simone Yearwood here? Or anyone from the library? So the Zoom zones, what we set up are spaces where you can go, John, exactly for the issue you've raised. So if you've got a class that's in person at the beginning of the day, then a class that's in person at the end of the day, but in between you got two virtual classes, well, where are you going to do those from? So in the library, we have more than 100 of these Zoom zones, and it's your own pod. It's your own space. You sign it out. They were so popular. Originally, we set it up so you could sign it out, sign up for a whole day. They're all being taken, all being filled. Now it's a three-hour time slot. It's wildly popular. I'm told today I was talking with Simone this morning about Zoom zones. She had something like 110 appointments. So, John, it's a great, great question. Yes, we have thought about it. And check out the Zoom zones because it's huge. We're looking at implementing some of this over in Queens Hall as well. And we think this will be a permanent sort of thing, that we will maintain these Zoom zones.
Thank you.
Kevin, you're calling on people, I think.
Yes, Joe, you can go next.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my question. I have two questions, actually. One is short and it maybe a little bit of an extension to the previous question. Regarding the 70% in-person and 30%, you know, online/hybrid component that you envision for the spring, do you anticipate that being uniform, you know, across all departments, or do you perhaps anticipate, you know, some departments may need less of an online component and that 70-30 is more of a total campus number? So that's my first question. And then my second question, regarding the funds that CUNY and Queens College has received for, you know, particularly for pandemic related issues. And I believe you had mentioned money for certain technologies and things like that. Do you have any information you could share in terms of future plans for technological tools? For instance, there's a lot of frustration about the fact that we're losing the Google Suite. And, you know, I know we have things like, you know, the Microsoft piece and Dropbox, if you will. Taken together, it you know, in total, it doesn't seem to kind of do the same thing for you as an instructor that the Google Suite did. And I'd just like to know if there's any plans for something that in the long run can, you know, replace the Google Suite and be a more comprehensive tool for instructors, especially during these times.
Absolutely. So on the first question about 70-30, I'll turn to our provost who is here. And I really want to praise Betsy. She and I are a team. There isn't anything on academics that I don't consult with her on. And for the most part, I defer to her. So she takes the lead as it should be. As provost, she's the chief academic officer, and she always consults with me. So we're really unified on this. I believe she's communicated about this, but I'll let her answer on 70-30 in just a moment. On Google Suite, our IT folks are working around the clock. I know, and my heart just goes out to the family. You're aware, one of our IT talented, dedicated staffers died just a week and a half ago on the job while supporting Queens College. It's just terrible. And the IT folks, they've just been heroic. Around the clock, we're keeping Zoom and everything running. So on the Google decision, I want to emphasize how much IT wants to help, but I would ask for your cooperation to They're just so strained to the limit. I try to remind myself of this, you know, don't make one more request, because it seems like just one little thing for me. But, you know, they got 20,000 students, 600 full-time faculty, you know, 2,000 employees. They're trying to deal with an amazing number of help desk emails and just the number of tickets that are open. So a decision was made, I'm told, it was about four and a half years ago by CUNY. Now, some of it is about money, all right? Google, it turns out, and I know sometimes you see they advertise, oh, it's this much, but that's good salesmanship. When you actually get to talking about what you would need for the data to be stored in the United States, that's one of the big legal constraints. It jumps to 100 times the cost that they advertise, and instantly we're well into the six or seven figures when you add on to the privacy and security. And you may have seen, it's not just money, it's the data security protocols. Google is great. You know, I use Google myself. But I'm a little worried when I read about some of the things that are happening. And if you ever look at those user agreements, the rights you're signing away. So, for example, if I was storing my photos on Google, you know, you give up all the rights and they scan it all and they harvest the data and they put it into their facial recognition and so on. So because of that, the state of New York and the CUNY system made a set of decisions that Google would not be officially used. And I know people have said to me, well, I've got a friend at such and such campus who's been using Google. I've looked into this. There is no campus that has official, recognized, supported by IT use of the Google suite. And I invite you, if any of you knows of open usage that's official and supported, don't hesitate to email me and tell me. I've checked. People have contacted me about a half dozen. They've said this department, that department. I've looked into every one of them. None of them is actually official and supported by IT use. It's all on, I think, on the street and the vernacular, you would say, on the down low. So that's the story with Google. And as president, I cannot condone usage because it would violate the of platforms that don't store the data in a manner that complies with law. So I wish I could wink at you and say, do what you want. But when you look into if you want the data stored in the U.S., it's a real problem. And you have to pay Google, I'll use a colloquial term, a boatload in order to meet that requirement. Provost Hendry, would you like to speak about the 70-30?
Sure. And the answer is yes, I have asked departments individually to use the 70-30 as a target. This is not going to be something where some departments are at 75% online, particularly at the undergraduate level. We expect the majority of the classes to be fully in person. In more graduate heavy programs, and there are some areas where we have online only programs, not a lot, but some, we will talk. But overall, we want to be at least at that 70%, and department by department, I am asking all departments to aim that. Also, that all full-time faculty should be teaching at least one in-person course.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thomas, do you have a brief question?
Yeah, it's a brief question. I had a question about 70-30 as well. I was wondering whether there'll be faculty discussion going forward about the number or the percentage of online versus in-person classes. So, you know, my department's had a lot of experience teaching online the last year, and it would be good whether to have the faculty, you know, some faculty input into this in the future when we're post-pandemic, when we're just coming up with the mix of online versus in-person, whether the faculty will actually have some say or whether this is going to be mandated from the administration without any faculty input.
I mean, I honestly think that we should, and I don't want to speak for the president, but it seems to me that in the long term, we were way, way below that 70-30 beforehand. We were almost entirely in person. I do think that looking at, and what I tried to say in my guidance to the chairs, is looking at what makes sense. And I do think that we should have discussions about where do we want to end up? And it should be based on the the pedagogy. So this is coming from, you know, for the spring, this is what CUNY has asked us to do, but absolutely in terms of figuring out where we end up long-term, whether we have programs that may, and I would say graduate programs really, but where they end up offering fully online options, and whether we expand that. We have, like I said, a couple now. I think that this is something that we should be discussing.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll add three things. First, I don't impose anything. As president of Queens College, I don't think it's my role to, I'm not a petty dictator. This is not a banana republic, all right? We're part of a system, though, and there are guidelines that the system sets. So the first is shared governance all the way. The second thing, I'm going to go out on a limb and say a couple things. Second thing is, I'm mindful. I'm a steward of this institution, not just for today or tomorrow, but for the next decade and in perpetuity. And I'm mindful of something. Long-term, institutions of higher education are enrollment challenged because of demographics. What I mean by that is, if you, and you can just project this out, for the rest of my working lifetime, this may be not true for the students, but for all of us who are faculty and staff, for the rest of our working lifetimes, the number of people of traditional college going age in the United States is going to decline proportional to the population as a whole. That's just because of birth rates, you know, unless something really strange were to happen, that will occur. And this means that we're going to have difficulty with enrollment. And if we don't offer students what they want, I'm not sharing with you anything that you can't find in newspaper headlines. Many of our private peers that are heavily, heavily, heavily in person saw huge enrollment spikes. While we've done okay, we need to look at students who aren't traditional students, traditional age students, which we've always done, and I embrace. It's very important as part of our identity. I just met with someone who graduated 51 years ago. We did a tour. She came to school with a three-year-old child. That's great. That's wonderful. I would love to see more students like that. But we also have to understand that our students want a mix. Some do want online, no doubt about that. And some want flexibility, and some want it one semester different than the other semester. But the interest in the online experience is a fraction, and the number of people who want in-person as their college experience is significant. And if we don't adapt, 2, 3, 5 years from now, we will be very unhappy as a community. And you'll all look and you'll say, hey, Wu, why do we have 50% of the students that we have? You know, how did we get here to this unhappy situation? And I want to prevent our collective unhappiness 5 years from now by giving students some in-person options, significant in-person options, safely. Third thing I'll say, and again, I'm going to go out on a limb. It has come to my attention that for some people, I don't know how many, but for some people, their concern about being on campus, maybe some of it's health, and you know, I don't doubt the heartfelt, good faith concerns that people have. Someone in my household is immunocompromised. I understand what this means. It means you have to be extra cautious. But for some folks, they don't like their commute, and that's a different issue. And we've tried to be flexible, and we are. You know, we're, for most of our offices, 3-2. 3 days in, 2 days remote work, and we've worked with everyone, but I will say something. This is CUNY policy. It's not just me talking. And if you don't like it, I want to be sympathetic, and you can contact me offline. But if you don't have a disability, so it's not an ADA accommodation, you cannot be 100% remote. Excuse me. If you have an ADA issue, of course, but otherwise we expect some presence here on campus, and that will remain true. That's part of building and sustaining a sense of community. So with that, back to you, Kevin.
Thank you so much, President Wu. Thanks everyone for their questions. I'll note that I saw some questions in the chat, some of which were answered and some of which were not. So please direct those to the appropriate offices or check the webpage. Those won't all get answered, and some of them did seem important. And we'll move on next. Stephen Grover is recognized. He has a memorial.
Thank you, Kevin. Yes, I would like to announce to the Senate the death of Emeritus Professor Alex Orenstein, who taught at Queen's College from 1967, when he was first appointed as a lecturer 5 years before his PhD, until he retired in 2011. So a good long stretch of 45 years of teaching here. Alex was a lifelong New Yorker. He was born in Brooklyn in 1936. His BA was from Hunter in 1956. His MA was from Columbia in 1963. He worked briefly in the private sector and then took a PhD at NYU in 1972. So he really covered the New York bases. He was appointed at Queens to a professorial line in the early 1970s. He was fired during the fiscal crisis of the 1970s, the department committed to rehiring him when funds became available, as they did. So he was then tenured and promoted and became a full professor by 1981. His principal intellectual interests were in logic, particularly in the implications for existence of the existential quantifier, as it's called in logic. His dissertation was published as a book called Existence and the Particular Quantifier. And he was also an expert on the philosophy of Willard Van Orman Quine, the famous Harvard professor. And he published a sort of intellectual assessment of Quine. And he taught logic and other subjects for us here. And he taught extensively at the Graduate Center. I have to say we lost contact with him somewhat after his retirement. And in fact, we learned only fairly recently that he had died of pancreatic cancer in 2018. It's a good reminder that we need to be more attentive in keeping in contact with our emeritus professors. And I would ask for a moment of silence from the Senate in his memory.
Thank you, Stephen. Yes, as is tradition, we would normally stand for a moment of silence, but we will do so now. Okay, thank you. Are there any other announcements, reports, any other memorials? Okay, thank you. Seeing none, we'll move on. There's no special motions under item 4. So we'll move on to the committee reports. I think I saw Ken earlier. The Undergraduate Curriculum Committee minutes from May 13th.
Yes, I'd like to move the May 13th Undergraduate Curriculum Committee minutes and ask for unanimous consent.
Are there any objections?
Even within the fuel tank itself, so the fuel system and the engine.
Okay, hearing and seeing none, so moved. The minutes are adopted. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Graduate Curriculum Committee minutes dated May 5th.
I move for unanimous consent of the GCC meeting minutes dated May the 5th, 2021.
Thank you. Are there any objections? Seeing and hearing none, the minutes are adopted. Thank you. And then last, thank are you. The nom- excuse me? Oh, yes, of course. Last are the nominating committee report from September of 2021. Peixi had to leave the meeting, so I would like to ask for those minutes to be approved.
Move unanimous consent.
Thank you, Dave. Are there any objections? Seeing none, the nominating committee report from September is approved. Moving on to old business, nominations to the nominating committee. There are five seats here. Are there any nominations for the faculty at large seat? Okay, hearing none, I'll ask, are there any nominations for the math and natural sciences seat? Okay, hearing and seeing none, I'll ask, are there any nominations for the social science seat? Okay, thank you. Seeing none, we'll move on. This will come up again in the future. So if you know anyone in these, I almost call them divisions, any of these schools or whatever we're calling them, please encourage them. Having people on the nominating committee is very important, especially now as we're trying to make sure we have good representation and can get a quorum and fill these seats. We have two student seats open. Are there any nominations, excuse me, for the education seat? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on and ask, there's an at-large seat. So as a student, you can do anything you want. Any nominations for that seat? Okay. Slightly easier to harangue students and faculty, but if you're a student here, you might consider asking someone who would be qualified to serve for one of these at-large seats, because again, this is old business and it will come back. Thank you. Moving on, there's a University Faculty Senate petition. The chair recognizes Stephen Grover.
Thank you. Yes, I would like to nominate you, Kevin Ferguson, for the University Faculty Senate seat in accord with the petition presented to the Senate.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Dave. All, is there any discussion?
Move unanimous consent.
Let's move unanimous consent. Are there any objections? Okay, seeing and hearing none, the petition, the nomination is accepted, approved, adopted. Thank you, everyone. Stay safe, have a nice weekend. We look forward to seeing you in a month's time. The meeting is adjourned, I should say that too. Oh, I have to ask about this though. I forgot, I'm just canceling things. Motion to adjourn the meeting.
Sorry, Kevin.
Bye-bye.
Second.
Kevin?
Thank you all. Yes, someone's asking.
Dan Weinstein, quick question. Yeah. I just didn't hear. I think we need at least one more student representative for one of our dean search committees. I thought, does that happen in this form or is that a separate thing?
This would be something I would want to check with Brenda and Dave about, or Brenda could speak to it now to make sure we have the lists up to date.
Okay.
Yes, we had to nominate a student to the social sciences seat. That was on the nominating committee report that was distributed prior to the meeting today.
Yeah, we did it.
Okay,
we did
thank
it.
You. Thank you.
The name of the student, I can say the name of the student. I'm sorry.
It's okay, I'll just email you and ask you for it.
Okay, Avi Cohen for the Social Sciences Team of Search Committee.
Thanks all.
Okay.
Thanks, Dan. Okay, everyone be safe. Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.